Hello, hello, and welcome to The Thin Blue Mind. Each week we will be looking at current policing issues and topics within the UK. Our regular panel consists of Steve Bradshaw, who is a TV and theatre actor, Richard Horton, author, and me, Dave Thomas, broadcaster. What we all have in common is over 80 years of combined police service. Now retired, we will be providing opinion and insights from the unique position of having been there and done it. Steve spent the majority of his service on firearms before being promoted to inspector, where he was a force incident manager. Richard was a career detective before going back into uniform as a response sergeant. Myself, I spent the majority of my service on the Rhodes Policing Unit before going into CID and Child Protection. You may not agree with everything we say, but we will make you think. The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion.
Well, hello, hello, and welcome to the Thin Blue Mind podcast with me, Richard Horton, the artist formerly known as Nightjack, Steve Bradshaw, who is an artist, and Dave Thomas, who's, due to a cold, going to be doing his best impression of Barry White for the duration of the podcast. We're here today with the idea that we might be able to give some advice to the new administration under Rishi Sunak. We were perhaps hoping we could get the same job done for Liz Truss, but she just wasn't here quite long enough for us to do that. So the idea is that you're a new Prime Minister, you've got a new old Home Secretary, and we might want to give them the benefit of our advice on what they might want to do with policing if they're thinking about policing in their new administration. I can start off, I'll throw into the mix. Performance targets, whether you call them key performance indicators or whether you say we must have a robust 20% of this or a 30% of the other. We've been with targets before. I remember living through the era of what was called red, amber, green, where even as a sergeant, you'd be paraded on to one of your chief inspectors once a month to look at how your team had gone on in terms of arrest targets, had they met their statute, you know, their target for the month or the week. Stop and search targets, crimes investigated, crimes solved. It's just everything was counted and everything had a target on it, and it was awful. What you couldn't say was, look, this is a small sample size. Actually, things go up and go down every week. Some weeks an officer's going to be tripping over prisoners and some weeks they're not, and it's going to be hard yards. There was no understanding of that. It was you had to explain why there was fewer this week than last week, and you got a pat on the back if there was more, and it was entirely capricious. So going back on targets, I remember being out on night patrol in one of our cities up here in the north of England, making an arrest for drunken disorderliness. I'm cuffing up the belligerent drunk. One of my crew says to me, Sarge, what it is, you are not measured on your arrest per month, and we are. Now, I had this thing about you shoot your own horse, you know, the cowboy way, it's my prisoner, I'm going to deal with the grief and the paperwork for it. And they were saying, I'm being measured on this and you're not, so can I have the prisoner, please? That's just kind of wrong, isn't it? It can't be right. It drives, and targets drive perverse behaviours like that. There's a lovely book by Simon Gilvall called Intelligent Policing. I'm going to send a copy to the Home Secretary so one of her people can read it and then perhaps they'll understand why targets are a bad thing in policing, from my view. Gentlemen, what's your view?
Looking in, the members of the public looking in will want a police service that has a measure to it, won't they? They want to know at the end of the year, at the end of the month, how have the police in my area performed, or the country, or the whatever. The strategic intention of targets and stuff, I can see why people would want a measure, because no measure just means that anything could be happening, and a measure suggests that we are focusing on something. But we've all lived through the issues around the target itself becomes the issue and becomes the thing we slave towards instead of the actual what's best for the public. We've all been there, haven't we, where, you know, is it an attempt burglary in a dwelling or is it criminal damage to a dwelling? When you look at the points of law, there was pressure or people were reclassifying things. And I would say for the police service to act in a way that some may say were dishonest practices goes against the grain, really.
Well, it is. I mean, I remember the old offence of robbery, and how many times was it theft and assault as opposed to a robbery? So, and the job would rather live with two crimes than one because it would be measured on robbery.
Well, we were serving the greens and the reds, weren't we? We were serving that statistical performance. We're not a bank. We're not an accountancy firm. We're the police. Things happen. Unexpected things can happen. Peaks and troughs.
We've already got a huge inspection system. If you want to know how your constabulary's got on, you can go to Majesty's Inspectorate of Police, Fire and Rescue Services, and you can read their peel assessments on your force and see where they're considered to be outstanding, adequate, inadequate, need improvement, whatever, across a whole range of policing performance. But it's not based on targets. They're looking at how well are you dealing with your calls? How well are you dealing with repeat instances of crime? Do you understand your demand properly? They're looking at actual pieces of work, of strategic, of tactical work that's being done within the service that's being inspected. And I think that's legitimate. And it's a legitimate way of doing the inspection. And if you want to know, rather than saying they cut the books, so in fact robberies are down 15%, but theft is up 15%, from the person is up 15%, and assaults immediately prior to a theft from the person is up 15% or whatever, those figures don't tell you very much.
Well, we now have a department that has a target on targets. I suppose by that, I mean, you know, we went from a system of being cautious as to what we crime to criming everything now. And if you hadn't crimed something, if you didn't think it was a crime, the victim didn't think it was a crime, but the department at the big factory would ring you up and say, well, this is a crime, you need to crime it.
Well, that all came from the call to crime document, didn't it? The drive to, quote, accurately record crime statistics. So what bobbies would do in the past, and I think we've covered this previously, is they'd take a job, do a little bit of investigation, ask themselves, has a crime actually occurred here? Do I think? A bit of a subjective test, a bit of an objective test to it, I suppose, if you went and spoke to someone else about it. And you would then make a decision to crime it. So you investigate to crime. Yeah. Now, it's switched to say, if someone says they've been a victim of crime, you crime it and then you investigate it, so it's crime to investigate. Yes. Which in itself, you know, force is getting bashed over the head because a certain force hasn't recorded 600,000 crimes. But really, are they actual crimes? And when you get into the actual minutiae of it, you know, we've got, and I've said it before, we've got confused, vulnerable people saying, oh, there's someone in my house, they've nicked my handbag, and it's not because they've got dementia or something, but it has to get crimed, and it's ridiculous.
I've had that call, and it's been, somebody's been in my house and stolen my record collection and replaced them with cheap East German copies.
I hope we got to the bottom of that.
Strangely, no.
Is that what you call a criminal record?
Ba-boom.
Oh, another script murder.
Absolutely. But we have that thing, when you're booking to be a sergeant, you get given projects, and my project as a sergeant was explain why there's been a rise in serious violent crime this summer as opposed to last summer, and suggest some ways that we might go about addressing it. So I looked at the figures, and I looked at last summer, and what I came back with was, last year you had a target to reduce serious violent crime, and I can show you where you cook the books, and you put a lot of serious violent crime into not-so-serious violent crime when you were crime classifying it. And here they all are, here's the printouts, and here's why it should have been a Section 18 or a Section 20, and it ended up being a 47 or even a 39 in some cases. And also, even with that, it's the only thing that shows up on the stats as being strange. Everything else, if you put them back where they should have been, nothing strange has happened. It's the same summer as you had last summer. You haven't got a serious violent crime problem. You thought you did, but in fact, you'd forgotten that you cooked the books last year to get rid of one last year. And that's the behaviour it drives. And this was at chief inspector level within a division. They didn't appreciate how much the books had been cooked the last year, and they thought they had a problem because the graph had moved up from what it was last year, and there wasn't actually a problem. Statistically, nothing had happened. In fact, nothing had happened for 5 years.
Well, that compounds the perverse behaviour, doesn't it? When it was cooked last year, and you had artificial figures last year, and now this year, you're thinking, oh, I need it to be even lower than that. So I need to cook them even more. And it's just massively dishonest practices that any cop who has been through that will really, really resist this idea of performance targets. Because
they were bad years.
They were very bad years. And the advice that we've got for Rishi about performance targets from me personally would be, what are we, 18 months from an election? He wants to be able to stand up at the dispatch box through times of some big austerity that's coming and say, we have reduced crime by X. And it was very particular, I found on last week's PMQs, was he actually mentioned burglary. He said the Home Secretary will be helping police tackle burglaries. So you can see that being the performance indicator now. Anybody who's looking at those stats, and I'm sure they will, we need to scrutinise, well, let's not just look at burglary, let's look at criminal damage to dwellings, let's look at all the little ancillary crimes that can burglaries can be pushed into, and you'll see a spike, and you'll see because there will be people feeling the pressure from up high to cook the books.
Well, I was making a list and picking up on something you said, Steve, and perhaps another bit of advice to the new Prime Minister is if you are going to implement change that doesn't require an outcome within the parliamentary lifetime of the government, and you're going to have to accept that you might not get the credit for some of the changes you bring in, and that's the problem, isn't it? It's the old saying, isn't it? A society grows great when old men plant trees in whose shade they shall never sit. It's a Greek proverb, and that's very true. And if you're going to make generational changes, then it takes a generation.
The thing is, we've not got a five-year government here, have we? No. We've not got somebody who's just come into power and looking forward 5 years. He's got 18 months. That's going to be the lifespan, and that's when he's going to have to stand up and say, I have done this. And it's an imperial figure that says reduced crime or reduced burglary by X.
It's quick wins, isn't it? And police work isn't a quick win. It takes, it's persistence and determination. And like I say, these governments now, they're looking for that headline.
Two things you could put in train as a government at this point around policing that will probably not pay off during the life of your government, but to me are worth doing. Number one, look at the Royal College of Policing. That is a thing that's been going on for quite a long time, and it hasn't embedded, I would suggest, with the police workforce. It hasn't delivered as much that's of use except the graduate entry programme, which doesn't seem to be going particularly great. That's the first one I'd say. Look at whether the College of Policing is doing what you want it to do. Reform it if it's not. If it can't be reformed, replace it with something else. That's the first one I'd say. Start looking at that. And the second one is, and again, it's an experiment that's gone on for a while, look at the role of Police and Crime Commissioner. Is that delivering what you actually wanted? Are we getting the benefits that were set out for it? Or has it become a way of making a governance of police locally sharply party political without any great benefits of police governance? Those both need looking at. I think there are experiments. They've been running now for a good number of years. It's time to actually do a review and say, well, we did it. You know, we did it. Has it worked? Can it be made to work? If it's not working, I suggest it's not.
There does need to be a central body of governance, like we used to have with the MPIA. But I think the college has grown into much more than that. And you're right, it needs to be reviewed. And again, it's figures, isn't it? PMQs last week. We have 15,000 of our 25,000 already recruited, and non-retirement resignations are an all-time high. Why is that?
And you've got 15,000 inexperienced officers. It's not their fault, but their input to output is not going to be as good, is it?
No, and this drive to professionalise the service. Policing has room for academics, don't get me wrong. We need thinkers, we need people who can change it. You know as well as I do, the best people sometimes that you turned out with on a night shift to go and police the streets and be a bit of robust policing weren't necessarily the people who were the academics. And there's a place for everybody, and I think we're trying to streamline it into you need a degree. Retention recruitment will be my advice, and it will be scrap this ridiculous idea of you get your degree.
The College of Policing took policing off the street and put it in the classroom. I think it's probably the best way I can describe it. So I suppose the advice to Mr. Sunak is to choose your counsel wisely. Speak to the experts, and if you don't have any, find them and embed them. Avoid think tanks with political aims, because they never work. And like you say, Steve, listen to the public. What do they want? Now, I think, was it Labour that made community policing a huge central tenet of their policing plan? And it is the bedrock of policing. You know, it's where every other branch of policing stems from. You can get your community policing right, then you're going to, without doing anything, improve recruitment of underrepresented groups, and all your policing will be intel-led, because at the moment we're just reacting.
We do. And having inexperienced officers on the streets very early in their careers is not going to help. Community policing is the bedrock. And when we say policing, preventing crime and disorder, preserving life and property, keeping the king's peace, all that sort of stuff, which you can do just by presence, by being within a community, by being known in the community. Problem we've got now is you find me someone that wants to spend an appreciable part of their career policing one area. The lights are much brighter there. They want to go downtown. They want to go to one of the specialist departments or No.
I must admit, some of the most enjoyable times I had were as a beat bobby in Blackpool Town Centre.
Sure.
It was a little bit like the Wild West, but, you know, fun times.
I think it's a good mix, isn't it? I don't think everyone all the time wants to be scrapping me drunks in the South Town Centre. I think there's a lot to be said for getting your teeth into local issues, isn't there? It doesn't give you a performance indicator. Isn't one of you go out and get five bits of paper?
How do you measure confidence?
You ask people if they've got confidence and where they have effective policing that they're happy with, that's visible, their confidence, and where they don't.
I don't think they do at the moment, do they?
The community policing was the bedrock of not just the confidence. And again, we forget what we're actually here to do. And it is to make people feel safe as well as making them safe. Because the perception of crime is the bigger animal than the actual reality of crime, isn't it? A lot of the time. And it's done by cops on streets.
I did about 18 fairly happy months on one of the estates in Blackburn. Just as foot patrol, I'd be turning up. They gave me a Land Rover, which was nice. I'd just park the Land Rover, get out and walk for the shift. Or if there was a burglary problem, speak to massage, get out on nights.
Yeah.
And address it with a bit of shoe leather and locking up the burglars. It's not, as they say, very difficult to do, but you have to dedicate officers to it and say, in neighbourhood, you are somewhat out of the rush of response and picking up jobs and picking up jobs and picking up jobs. Your job is to get into that community. If there's stuff that needs doing, if there's people that need locking up, get them locked up. But talk to people.
Yeah.
And be present there and be present when there's problems. If there's problems on your patch and they're outside 9-5 weekends off, then you're working outside 9-5 weekends off until that's sorted. That's like a commitment to... It's a commitment I gave when I was doing that sort of work. And it's a commitment you'd expect from police officers. But you're getting back to neighbourhood, enabling neighbourhood. Even though we've moved to a model of people driving into an out-of-town operations centre and then driving back out to wherever it is that they're meant to be policing in a car, never really getting out of the car unless they're getting out to deal with the job. That's not really a model of policing that works for community-based policing.
No, because community-based policing was decimated through austerity 1.0, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And police stations shut because of money and there was less cops. So it's a great idea, isn't it, to be walking around your beat area. But we can't because, as we've said before, the demand on dispatch screens that you're going to life-at-risk emergencies or grade twos, you've got to be there within an hour. So people are responding, and you're right, the fire brigade policing.
So more cops and cops that are staying for longer and cops that perhaps are willing to take on a vested interest over a period of years in policing a particular community. Encourage that, Mr. Sunak, Ms. Braverman. You know, you're recruiting extra cops, you say that's great. Make it even more. Because I think the inspection is probably as good a tool as you've got. How well does this force do its community policing? How connected with the local communities are? That's the thing that an inspector can go in and look at and see what the engagement is, see what the resources deployed to it are, and see how often those resources are abstracted away back to response, which is the current bugbear for community police officers.
Well, I suppose that brings us on to investment, doesn't it? That horrible topic of money. And I'm not suggesting we aimlessly throw huge buckets of money at the police. It has to be with purpose. But it's not just the police, isn't it? Because, you know, we've been underfunded, but so have the other services that we now appear to support and prop up. So it's just as important to fund those other services, social care, mental health, which will allow and free the police up to do what they should be doing.
It's about number 4 or 5 on my list of things I wanted to bring up. Let's sort out community mental health. We look at how much police time is absorbed dealing with community mental health issues, whether it be just dealing with people who create a demand because of a mental health condition, whether we're dealing with attempt suicides, threatened suicides, and people that have been section 136, and then you're waiting 23 hours to get them assessed in a cubicle at a hospital. The idea of closing down all the asylums and bringing people that could be treated and live in the community, care in the community, was a really good idea, bringing back some dignity for them and the rest of it. Assertive outreach teams and all those basket there that was there to make sure people didn't fall through the cracks. And with austerity, those have been withdrawn. And so people don't get that care and support in the community to live a proper life and end up living some fairly miserable lives full of self-harm and danger. And we end up having to deal with or mitigate that. It's not right. We're an emergency service. We're not a mental care service.
But we're a 24/7 service that saves life. And there's always going to be that rub. This isn't our job, but someone's at risk. It becomes our job.
But if the resources were there so that fewer of those people came to risk, came to our attention, that it was being dealt with within the community, they were being enabled to live better lives in the community.
Yeah, finding out why people are falling into the river instead of rescuing them.
There's nobody looking, or they are looking and going, well, it's okay because they're going to float downstream and the police will probably pick them out at the end. Yeah. That seems to be the model at the moment.
What frustrates me, you've got in the National Police Chiefs Council, 43 forces, isn't there? I'm assuming they all speak to each other. They don't seem to speak as one voice. And I've never understood why they have not turned round to whoever is in power and say, this is what you're doing to us, this isn't working, this is what you need to do. And we don't seem to have that professional, expert voice.
I know they've been fighting shy at various issues. Financial settlements aren't necessarily sorted for everybody. And there's the idea you put your head over the parapet and your QPM and your NITUD's potentially at risk and that sort of thing. But actually, if you're National Police Chiefs Council, maybe you should, Dave. Maybe it's right. You should be standing up and speaking up for policing.
You know, as one voice, they're a very powerful body. And nobody has turned around to the government and said, you're not doing this.
They're a long lever. They're certainly a longer lever than the Police Federation, for example. When they speak, if they go public, it gets traction, it gets news. That's that truth to power thing. There's certainly a role for them to do that. They know the damage that's been done to policing because they've been living with making these awful decisions for the best part of a decade.
But it doesn't help, does it? There was a chief constable recently, I think. Is he the head of College of Policing now? I'm not sure. Who said that officers don't really need to know the law so much these days because they've got digital devices to fall back on. And I just put my head in my hands when I read that.
Yeah, you would do. It's basics, isn't it? Know your laws, know your powers.
This is the chief constable, and the government could act on that information, and it's just wholly wrong.
Public confidence. I want a cop who comes to my house who knows the law. I'm not talking about the intricacies of some weird act that no one ever.
Well, you get a working knowledge, don't you? When you're on the street.
This is going to be another landmark moment, I think. 2022 is going to be the beginning of a period of austerity that we're going to say. I really do fear for policing. The state where we're at now and the problems and the investment that were needed across the board, mental health, social care in the community, all that, to take the load off all the different services, and the fact that it's going to get cut again.
I think it's fair to say, isn't it, that we've had the notice of intended austerity from the new Prime Minister, the way he's talking, and you're right. Yeah, it's the future's not looking good, to be honest. I don't want to be pessimistic. Yeah, but
performance targets are also a lot cheaper than investing. You set performance targets and you know, because of your experience through the 90s and the 2000s, that those targets will be met by hook or by crook, but you don't have to spend money on getting extra police officers, putting stations back into your towns and your market towns and throughout your cities. It's just a cheap option.
They were banging on about reducing the murder rate by 20%, weren't they? You know, there's nothing left to give. What's going to be have to sacrifice to address that target, which, frankly, is unachievable anyway?
Yeah, that's a lap of the gods thing, isn't it? Again, you look at murder rates year to year. In most parts of the country, there's nothing significant going on. You know, the difference between 15 last year and 20 this year and 10 the next year, statistically, nothing strange has happened. It's just how it was, and you're counting arbitrarily year-end to year-end as well, and it's just meaningless.
The ups and downs of life, but the trickle-down effect of all this austerity and the effect on people's lives is going to have such an impact on things like murder rates, DV rates, suicides, alcoholism, the pressures on the NHS. I think we're getting to the point, it's not just the police, but other agencies, it's going to get to the point where we just can't do the bronze function anymore. We all talked about gold standard, actually keeping the wheel on. I think it's coming where we won't. And when it breaks, it'll get reformed. And I'm talking about 43 forces will become 5 or something like that. And
with a view to saving costs.
There'll be massive, massive changes. And the whole model of policing, it'll take something that is so radical and keeps policing looking at crime. The other thing I will say, and again, it's our new Home Secretary. I get a feeling, a bit of an old-style support unit kind of Home Secretary with a strenny on and a peaked cap down the face, as in a bit of robust policing. She's already had a go at the woke element.
Some munching Guardian literate, yes.
Yeah, but that will affect the welfare side of stuff, because I'm sure she'll think the welfare side of policing is this woke brigade. And again,
got how many officers off sick with stress?
Get them out to work, get them on the streets, start banging heads and this, that and the other, and blah, blah, blah. Well, ILPC, yeah, let them do the job. The two don't match, do they?
Well, again, you know, this is politics, isn't it? A month or two ago, they were using the reason that nobody went to a burglary from the police because they were too busy dancing with rainbow stripes on their faces, when clearly that has no impact at all on burglary rates. It's the fact that there are so few police officers doing other things that you said, Steve, that they're not able to attend burglaries. But it's so frustrating, isn't it, when you're looking from, all right, we're not in the job anymore, but effectively looking from the inside out, all these points of view and narratives that are being portrayed, which are completely untrue.
It's been pointed out we lose more time to sports leave than we do to Hey Macarena. You know, you have a bobby come to you, I've been asked to represent the police at sort of national level. You'll get a day's leave granted for that sort of thing. So we lose more through sports leave than we do through the Hey Macarena stuff, which is crazy.
The Hey Macarena stuff, don't get me wrong, community engagement is important for the reasons we've already said. But the optics of the Hey Macarena, I just don't like, because it's a dog whistle to those going, what happened to my burglary from 15 years ago?
It's not my favourite either, Steve.
Just every grade one that fails on a screen, and we didn't get somewhere within a certain amount of time, and there's a video of someone doing the Macarena, I just think, that's a dog whistle to the group.
It's the old saying, isn't it? Intent and effect. Yes, the intention is to embed yourself into various groups and minorities, but the actual effect of that is that it's turned a lot of people against the police, but that's been part of the narrative that the government have pushed.
But we can't do that. If there's still a grade one that's failing and we're not getting to it, we strip back every other function that we have until we meet our grade one and grade two responsibilities. And if it's stuff that say we'd love to do some community engagement, but we can't because there's grade ones on the screen. Anything that's done in the police that's not saving life or protecting the public right there and then needs to be asked, can I do this? And is there a grade one on the screen?
It's because we've become a response organisation. Yeah. But it shouldn't really get to that, but there's not enough flex in the system. There's not enough bobbies, basically, to give downtime for people or flex.
We can go to the public and say we've not got enough cops when we've got people at coffee mornings, which I'd love to do for the reason I've already said. Love to do that. Love to engage with the community. Yeah. They all get stripped out. I think we need to stop doing everything and focus in on we just go and save people and protect people and the rest of it. Someone else can do, or it ain't getting done. And if that's a ticking time bomb, well, that's a ticking time bomb, I'm sorry, but
it is where we are now.
The here and now is what we need to respond to. And I think there'll be a policing model in a couple of years' time that kind of encompasses that.
Whoever's in power, and whatever your political persuasions and views, you know, these people aren't stupid. And they will be told the true picture of policing. I know you're talking about a reform. I'm not so sure. I mean, they can't even sort climate change out, and I'm talking governments across the world. So what chance have we of them trying to sort the police service out?
It needs to break to get sorted. They can't keep applying these patches to it and saying, oh, the panacea was that we were going to recruit 50,000 cops. It's just fudging figures again. It just needs to break. But unfortunately, cops will break, and that's not what I'm after.
It's that dire. Just for people listening to the podcast and thinking, you know, they're over-egging the pudding. We're not. It really is dire.
I said 10 years ago, within my lifetime, we will see the army on the street policing. I can see them, a big public order situation or a mass event. I can see them being there, stood on the streets with the long wooden poles. I'm not suggesting they're going to shoot anybody, but, you know, they're trained in public order, the army, because of, I think, Northern Ireland. So I can honestly see them being on the streets at some point.
I'd hope not. That would be a terrible time for us if we got to that. We may get to it, but it'd be a terrible indictment,
wouldn't it?
It would. Policing can't deal anymore. We're not at that point quite yet, I don't think. We could still do big public order events, but we couldn't do two. Especially if Manchester and London both went off, or Manchester and Birmingham both went off.
And these events are infectious, aren't they?
Yeah, then we would probably struggle to effectively do both of them these days.
Yeah, I think once austerity starts to really hit people, so it might not be next spring, but I do fear a uprising of some description, mass public order issues around the major towns. Cops will not be able to deal with it. And so they'll need to draft in. And it'll take somebody like Braverman to say, yeah, whatever power she needs to give for the army to deploy on the UK streets, she will do.
Well, I think the powers are already there in America.
Yeah, yeah, but she needs to sign off on them, I think, doesn't she?
You know, martial law, God forbid.
She will have a robust attitude to the dealing with these people. Last week's PMQs again was talking about bulky lefty protesters type of people. So it's going to be Big Stick Brigade coming out and...
It won't be pretty. And we're incredibly fortunate, aren't we, for having such a mild winter at the moment. You know, as you say, once it goes cold and people are having to turn that heating on and they're just not going to be able to afford it, people are going to be splicing into the electricity supplies, diverting gas. They'll do what they have to do.
Yes. Part of the stability with policing in my era was the stability of a 30-year career. You did your 30 and you retired on a decent workable pension, possibly with a lump sum. And mostly, you were out before you got much past your mid-50s, you know, your late-50s. That seemed decent because the job you were being asked to do, if you never go further than constable or sergeant, the job that you're being asked to do, you're physically still doing it. But now when you're looking at people doing potentially 40 years in the job, you don't get many late entrants at that point that get through to a full pension. You get people that are policing in a physically demanding occupation at the wrong end of their life. So have some thoughts as to what sort of a police service you want and whether you want to encourage recruitment, retention, and perhaps roll the pension arrangements back one, because the new one seems to support healthy churn, if nothing else, because I doubt there'll be many people coming in the new scheme that will see it all the way through to the end.
Mm. The government are looking at releasing this triple lock for pensioners, and that's a big decision for a Conservative Party to make. So they're not going to do anything with the police pensions.
And that's it. It's a forlorn hope, if you will.
So, Richard, thanks for hosting this today with my voice. So perhaps we could just, in summary, put a list forward to the government then.
Well, yeah, I think if we start off with, please don't do targets. If you're going to inspectors for efficiency, use the tools you already got. The Magistrates Inspectorate seems to be a legitimate and proper tool for that, and then local people can look at the performance of their force and see that it's been inspected and where they're good and where they're bad and where they need to improve. That'd be a first thing. Have a think solidly about police and crime commissioners and the College of Police. They're an experiment that's been allowed to run for a while now. Are they doing what you hoped they would do? Can they be reformed, or should there be something else in their place? Look at recruitment and retention. It's not working. You need trumpeting figures that you're getting, but under the hood, there are real concerns. You're not going to meet your recruitment targets, and your recruitment targets will just about keep things at a standstill. And you're not even then looking at re-recruiting non-sworn staff, civilian staff into the police, thousands and tens of thousands of whom were lost as well. Please, please think about sorting out the pensions. Think about a return to community policing and where you can make that possible for the police to get back into communities in numbers over a course of time, committed to an area long enough to get known, long enough to be effective, because from that community policing flows so much good in policing. It's all great knowing there's burglary happening. It's better if you know who the burglars are, where they live, where they're getting rid of the stolen property. For an example, that's community intelligence that you'll miss out on by not having people on the ground. It's been an interesting conversation, whether anything will happen or whether we're going to end up in a couple of months being stuck with some more key performance indicators like reduced murder by 20%. Who knows? I suspect that's what we'll get because it don't cost.
Well, as the Americans say, I fully endorse this message.
Steve?
Yeah, recruitment retention is the one big thing for me. Like I've said before, what do you want the police to do? Focus on that, nothing else, and don't get shouty when the other things don't get done. Because we are here to protect people, keep the king's peace, save life. Perhaps let the police do that.
The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. This podcast is in partnership with Policing TV, the leading policing media channel. So until the next time, on the next podcast, take care.